from 36 all out to an 8-wicket win. I mean, turnarounds don't come across as staggering as this. You look at 2001, that was a turnaround. That was India-Australia again. This time to Ajinkya Rahane, a very different captain from Virat Kohli, and of course, a very different Indian team from what Sourav Ganguly had in 2001. But again, a turnaround, probably one of the greatest comeback wins in Indian cricket history or all Test cricket history. Hello and welcome to Hotspot for this latest episode. We're going to talk all things about the second Test match. As always, I'm your host, sports journalist and broadcaster Chetan Narula. And joining me all the way from Goa in party mode, former Indian cricketer and broadcaster Deep, your first reaction to that amazing, amazing Test win in Melbourne?
Iconic and historic, and I seriously didn't think that they will go on to win it as convincingly. I knew they would do well, but it was quite a convincing win.
And of course, joining us, we have a different guest. We don't have Bharat Sundaresan joining us this time, but he will be back before the third test, previewing it and giving us all the lowdown, what's happening down under. But we have someone very, very special. She's making her debut on Hotspot, formerly from the ESPN Cricket Info, and now a freelancer just like us and plying her trade anywhere and everywhere possible in 2020. We welcome on the show for the first time the ever likable Melinda Farrell. Hello, Mel, all the way from Melbourne. How's the year been for you? How's the cricket been for you?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to apologise, because by having me instead of Bharat Sundaresan, it means that you have someone who doesn't have nearly as nice hair. So I'm always so jealous of his hair. I've been asking him for tips on hair care and products and everything, but he keeps it a closely guarded secret. Look, it's been a crazy year. It's not the year that I expected it was going to be. I had all sorts of exciting projects lined up, and I ended up spending it with my mum in Orange, which is a country town in about 4 hours west of Sydney. But you know, you have to try and be philosophical about this. I'd never give back 6 months spent with my mum. So now it's just amazing to be at the cricket and to be there watching Test cricket. I just can't even describe how much it's meant to me. I felt really emotional. It's not the cheering that has really got to me. It's the quiet cricket chatter. You know, that chatter in the quieter moments of the game. That has just been really lovely for me to hear again. So, yeah, really enjoying being here. And what an incredible series. It's a cracker.
Absolutely, cracker as you defined it. And it's been that sort of a year. And of course, shout out to Bharat. We all take hair care tips from him. You know, it's been that sort of a year that we all been losing hair. So yeah, not just maintaining our mane, but also how to keep it growing. But more about the cricket, your reaction, Mel, from that Melbourne test. I mean, you were there in Adelaide, 36 all out. First of all, could you believe 36 all out? And again, for the Indian team to bounce back the way they did with Virat missing, Ishant Sharma missing, Rohit Sharma missing, Mohammad Shami missing, it's been a wonderful turnaround and comeback.
Yeah, it has. I mean, first of all, when you talk about could I believe the 36, no. It was one of those things that I've been there for lots of collapses and I've seen lots of collapses. And usually there's this, like, there'll be one player who, you know, get even 30 or 40 runs or something. So the complete implosion on that day was really unbelievable. And I think, look, before the test, you're hearing lots of chatter around, and there were quite a few people who thought that if India didn't win that first test, that, you know, they'd probably lose 4-0.
Yeah, yeah.
And after that test, You had a lot more people going, yeah, well, definitely 4-0, and it could be really grim. So in that sense, the context of all of that and missing all those players, as you said, missing Kohli, and especially in some ways, you know, losing Umesh so early in that match, you don't want to lose a bowler that early. Yeah. It was incredible. In other ways, I almost don't think it's as big a turnaround, just in the sense that What did we see from Australia in the first test? And we saw a batting lineup that was flawed, brilliant bowling, and really good catching, really good fielding. Now, the main difference for them in the second test was they had a fragile batting lineup. Their bowling is brilliant. This time their fielding wasn't so good. So in the end, you take out that India batting collapse, and there's still not a massive difference between the two sides. So while it is a big turnaround, in that sense, there's still a sense of, wow, we shouldn't really be that surprised, I guess.
Sets up the series really wonderfully, because now you know that this Indian team can push beyond its weight, even when missing those four key players. I mean, Rohit Sharma is back now, so Umesh Yadav is out, so it's still four key players. But it is a series now that is now at an equal pegging, not just looking at the scoreline, like the way Mel said, in terms of the bowling, batting and fielding. You take out the 36 all out and both teams are probably equally rounded. But we'll come back to the first point Mel made, Deep. You know, it was more a mental thing. We had discussed in the last episode, especially with Ajinkya Rahane as the captain, Ravi Shastri, the support staff. Your thoughts, first up, on the way, you know, Ajinkya Rahane led this side. I mean, yes, all his plans seem to work. He had some really good bowling changes, the fielding placements. There's been a lot of chatter about Virat Kohli's captaincy. We're not going to go there because that's not a debate for the present. What is a topic for the present is Ajinkya Rahane's captaincy in a situation where it was not just about the team, but also about him individually, because there was a pivotal moment in the first test which turned around the game there as well. So his captaincy in the second test match.
Now let's look at relook at the first test match. The first test match, it was evenly balanced. India had one terrible session. That's all. I think India was ahead before that session in that test match. So one terrible session of 36, and we all agree that's an aberration. That's not going to happen in another 40, 50 years, right? India will not be bunted for 36. It's going to be a while. So if you look at that, and as Mel and you both mentioned, it was a mental thing. Coming out of it, I think the biggest statement for me was the playing 11, right? When you look at that playing 11, the easiest thing for you to do would be Virat is gone, get KL Rahul or a batsman in, right? Now, what did you do? You can all-rounder in. Now, that was a statement, as I'm concerned, saying, you know what? 36 was an aberration. That's not going to happen. We still have the same amount of confidence and faith in our batsmen. In fact, you know what? We're not going to go with another a full-time or a out-and-out batsman. We're going to go in for an all-rounder. Having said that, I think Jadeja, for me, in the last couple of years, has been a proper all-rounder, both with bat and ball. So I think that was statement made straight away with that 11. Going in with five out-and-out bowlers, as in, you know, including Jadeja and six batsmen, and also making those changes in Rahman and Shubman Gill and all. So once I saw that 11, I knew this team is fine. Because in a crisis situation, there are only two ways to go. Either you split up into smaller groups and the whole team breaks up, or the crisis situation galvanizes, and that's what's happened. I think with the Indian side, the team has galvanized after what has happened post Adelaide and obviously Virat not being there, Shami not being there. This looks like a different side. See, and just going to what Mel mentioned, both the teams are very, very similar. The whole 4-0 thing based on what? Bowling sides are very similar. You know, Warner is back. Smith is back. Smith is struggling to buy a run right now, right? Yeah, I mean, the great batsman that he is. I mean, it's sad to see he is struggling. What, 10 runs in two test matches now? Warner is not available. Rest Labuschagne. I mean, last 1 year, he's the highest run test cricket. I mean, he's got, 240s in two test matches. And he's the only Australian batsman who's... He didn't even look comfortable, to be honest. I mean, drop catches, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, the whole concept around that 4-0 was around that now Australia has a better batting unit than 2018. But that batting unit is not firing. Yeah. And very similar sides, as Mel mentioned, you know, top bowling sides, two top bowling sides in the world, two fragile units.
I'm glad that Deep mentioned Australia's batting, because that was going to be my next point. Mel, how many times has it happened that, you know, an Australian batting lineup, when you have David Warner and Steve Smith returning, you have Manus Labuschagne, like Deep said, he's been scoring runs plenty. They haven't been able to score 200 runs against an Indian bowling attack. The Indian bowling is really fine, great bowling attack, but not even reaching 200 on their home soil. You wouldn't expect too many changes in the Australian lineup for the first two tests. Obviously, you've just rolled India for 36 all out. You've just won the first test. You don't want to change too many things. But this is, it is a bit surprising. Not even 200 runs. 195 in the first innings. And then again in the second innings, they were again rolled out for 200. It's just so surprising.
It is and it isn't. Like, it is in a way. But you just, if you look back over the past couple of years various combinations of David Warner, Steve Smith, and Marnus Labuschagne, I think have really papered over some really big, significant cracks in the Australian batting lineup. There have been contributions from others, but they have been really heavily reliant on those three players for runs. And you take David Warner out as, you know, an injured player, and then you, as you say, you have Marnus and Steve Smith, and particularly Steve Smith is the big conundrum because he has really been struggling. And interestingly, he was absolutely brilliant in the one-day series against India that led into this. And it was like, whoa, he looks on fire, and he hasn't been able to carry that in. He did talk about recently that the fact that he hasn't seen his wife, Danny, for 4.5 months. I wonder, for someone who is, he's such an eccentric character. We talk about bubbles a lot in the world now. Steve Smith has always seemed to carry this bubble, especially since he came back from the ban. In England, we saw it was like impenetrable, both to the bowling and to the crowd abuse and everything. And now it seems to have got him. And the way they've got him out, you know, the Ashwin has got him out a couple of different ways, and then Bumrah as well. The fact he almost has a compulsion to sort of fall into that little leg side trap is quite interesting. I've been watching him a lot in the nets. He practices more and in that bubble. It's like the whole world disappears around him, and it's just him and that ball in the nets.
Yeah. Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
You and Chetan.
Yeah.
Somebody who's as intense as Smithy is, I mean, we all know him, he's extremely intense. So when the going is good, it's fine, but when the going is not good, do you think there is a tendency of him, someone like him, to overanalyze what's going wrong as well?
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, he's gone more when the going gets tough, say, example, in the Ashes in England. But in Australia, he hasn't had amazing returns since then. And I guess that's what I'm talking about, the intensity that he has, and maybe not having that the normal family support around him to be able to unload or whatever it is he needs to do. I'm just trying to look for answers like everyone else. But I definitely, Bharat has probably mentioned this to you, but we have this theory that Ashwin in particular has got in his head. You know, he's down the other end when Bumrah is bowling and he's shadow batting to Ashwin. And it's like, you know, he's facing him at both ends. So that has clearly got to him. He does this thing in the nets when he's frustrated. He'll hit the ball and then he does this, like he's trying to say over and over and over. And he goes back, he'll face another ball over and over and over. And he does this hand movement. And it looks like a sign of frustration. I don't know where he gets out of this from, but it's a really tough one because I think he just has that leg side sort of plan to him in his head. And Ashwin, by the way, is the only spinner who's managed to make that work against him. Lots of seamers have tried it and some have had some success. Ashwin's had success with that now. So I don't know. You know, as an international big time, big deal batsman, how you cope with these things when someone gets in your head. But, it's clearly there when he's shadow batting to Ashwin while Bumrah is bowling. It's almost like it's something that's there that somehow he's going to just have to get out of his head, along with that sort of leg side aberration that's now become not an aberration.
Interesting that we're mentioning Bharat Sundaresan a lot in this episode. And I want to mention again his name, because he made this point in the last episode that with the bio bubble being there and the players being inside this bubble, and, you know, that his point was regarding the Indian fielding, because India dropped a lot of catches. And he says, you know, sometimes it's not just the mistakes, that you make on the field. It's more mental because you're just tired of the whole situation. And I think that's now applicable to Smith as well. And you just need to step out sometimes. I don't know if the players are allowed to do that or not, but you just need to step out, get a coffee, probably meet his wife, just have a chat with her, sit at a distance of 6 meters and just have a chat with her, just see her physically, or do something different from what he's been doing for the last, 4 months now, because he was part of the IPL bubble before this. So the other thing is that as we go ahead with it, I mean, you look at the next 6 to 8 months, yes, in most of the nations, vaccination has started, especially UK or US, Europe. This is going to catch up. This vaccination trend is going to catch up. But even until then, for the next 6 to 8 months, the bio bubbles are going to continue. Cricket is going to increase. You look at the calendar, Jan to March, or with the IPL happening in April, May, the bio bubble is not going anywhere. So are we going to see this over the next year where the players are getting affected in the way they're batting, bowling, fielding? I think this is a trend that is just starting out. We might even see players dropping out of a series. Who knows? Smith might not play the next IPL because he wants to be home. Just be home. Just not do anything. Just not play cricket, because then he has a very, very important year after that. You have the T20 World Cup. You have the Ashes at home. So it's just a trend that is just starting, and it's a bit worrisome. But also about that leg side theory, Deep, like Mel mentioned, he's been shadow practicing to Ashwin. Again, it's been a theory that, you know, you target him on the middle and leg because he has this exaggerated movement towards the off, and he's so strong off his legs. Anything on his legs, he's going to punish it. But this time around, India are showing it a bit differently. They're just consistently targeting his middle and leg, especially Ashwin. You've played international cricket. How do you get out of that?
It's a mental thing, as Mel mentioned. And the worst part is, first test, he gets him out with his outside edge. Second game was the inside edge,
yeah,
with the ball turning. So as a batsman, you're thinking, you know, which side's gone. Obviously, he did not pick it up. He did not pick the straighter one. He did not pick the one that turned. So as a batsman, you're thinking, what am I going to get this time around? Right. So that's where, you know, your mind starts playing games with you. And my only, why I asked you those, both of you, that question is because somebody who's as intense and as him needs a safety, needs to have a safety wall where he can let go of that, something which is off the field. And now, as Mel mentioned, I mean, the fact that he has his support group, and obviously Danny, his wife, is one of the main pillars of that. He's not, I mean, he can't meet them or whatever, because he's a very introvert kind of a person as well. You know, somebody who will not go out and start talking to people and all that. He's got set number of people, few people around him. I've had the pleasure of, you know, spending time with him for 2-3 years. And he's that very, he's close kind of a guy. And it just seems to me it's a challenge that he, and everyone, all players, because as you mentioned, Chetan, this is the new normal, right? Yeah. Bubbles and all. We will have to find a way to let ourselves loose at times, which will totally new. It's not going to be the same old stuff that we used to do. Go watch a movie, go with friends, go have a drink or whatever. It won't be the same. So we will all have to find our new normal now. And I think people who are a little more intense and more introvert will find it more difficult to find those new ways as people who are a little more outgoing. I think that's something that all of us will need to figure out. As far as Smith and leg side thing is concerned, listen, that's again his strength. The whole idea is, I think that's where you've got to give credit to the Indian bowlers, that they've been extremely disciplined with their length and obviously in. Length is very important, because anything, he will whip it, anything short, he will blew. There is this in between roughly 5 to 6 meter length that you need to bowl, where all he can is flick it, not really whip it. Yeah. And for that, you have fielders around. I think got a credit to the Indian bowlers for being so disciplined, and the attachment fourth, you know, as the middle and off stump, they really have not, you know, gone too leg side-ish, so to say. You know, so I think you've got to give credit to the Indian bowlers being so, so disciplined.
They've really dried that up for him as a release area to just be able to get it. Because that's a Smith thing, isn't it? He's always able to frustrate teams because he will find a way just to pick up a single or a couple of runs on the leg side. And he nearly, like Ashwin, I think it was Ashwin nearly got him, and when Pujara was fielding in that leg slip area as well. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, can you imagine if he got out again to that same delivery? And the other thing is, if you're talking about a release, it ain't going to happen now, because with this new spike of cases in Sydney, and there have been a couple in Melbourne, now the security bubble around the teams is, if anything, it's tightening. So that's got to be really secure, because otherwise they will not get into Queensland, which is where the Gabba is. So it's a very fluid situation here, and that team around that bubble around the teams has now been tightened even further when it comes to biosecurity.
An interesting, Mel, that you mentioned that, and I'm talking about the cricket, not the bubble. There was this one delivery which landed just short of Pujara, you know, in the second innings, almost got it the same way before the Bumrah dismissal happened. And it's interesting. I want to come back to that. What you mentioned about him shadow batting to Ashwin while facing Bumrah. even at the non-strikers end. There's a school of thought here that, you know, it wasn't just Ashwin, it's also Bumrah. This two bowlers who just handled the attack so well, the senior bowlers just really stepped up. What did you make of the Indian attack? You had Bumrah to contend with. He's been fabulous at the MCG in 2018 and now in 2020. Ashwin, he's a completely different bowler overseas, completely different bowler. There was, for my mind, there was never any doubt about his abilities, but there's always been this debate about what he's done overseas and all. But now I think he's ended that debate once and for all. Mohammad Siraj, brilliant comeback. And then the way India used, brilliant debut from Mohammad Siraj. And you tweeted about his family and that tweet just went viral about him losing his father, all of the extenuating circumstances. And then India using Umesh and Jadeja the way they did. The entire attack, they did not let it slip once they had Australia on the edge.
I think one of the great things for India in this series is just has been the depth of bowling, and particularly the depth of fast bowling, which I think Steve Smith made a comment before the series started that say without Ishant Sharma that it wasn't as threatening as an attack, and he's possibly, you know, had to eat his words a little bit or eat a little bit of humble pie. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Siraj. I mean, I was watching him when they were singing the anthem. And yeah. He had his eyes closed and he was looking up and there was so much, like my heart went out to him then. But he's been really good through the tour. I noted with interest, you know, the only time when Cameron Green was playing at Drumoyne Oval in the warm-up game, the only time he was troubled and looked off balance was when Siraj bounced him. And so it was interesting that it was a short ball from Siraj that ended up ending his innings when he was really looking solid on defence. So, you know, Siraj has been wonderful, but just even watching them in the nets, I mean, Saini has looked really good in some of their sessions, probably particularly before this Melbourne test. And I'm personally very excited to see Natarajan as being added to the squad, because you'd have to say he's an outside chance of playing, you would think, with the least amount of experience. But mate, in the nets, he's got Kohli out several times. He's got Pujara out. He's got Rahane out. He's been beaten inside edges, outside edges. He's looked really great. So I loved watching him in the nets. So it's great to see him coming in. But so you look at, they've got probably these bowlers that maybe haven't been the biggest household names, especially in Australia. But they've been waiting in the wings. Thakur is also there as well, coming in for Shami. So this will test out India's depth in fast bowling. But so far, they've been very much up to the task. And just a word on Bumrah. I still think of him as a happy little puppy dog who just can't quite believe he's playing test cricket. So, oh, look, I'm here. But he and Ashwin, when Siraj was bowling, those two were like, you know, they, one of them or both of them walking back with him, talking to him all the time. They really took that leadership role, maybe going from Rahane's example, but they gave him a lot of support. And the tightness of that team and the support of each other, I think, has been really interesting to watch.
And Mel, you've been probably witnessing the next phase of Indian fast bowling, Indian test cricket fast bowling, because Saini is so highly rated and Natarajan, he's adding different deliveries to his repertoire. Deep, when I saw Siraj bowl making his debut, it reminded me of a young Mohammad Shami. I know you're a huge Mohammad Shami fan. I'm a huge Mohammad Shami fan. We dedicated a whole episode to him last year. Second innings Shami, the lack of chicken biryani and how he's turned around things. Did you get that feel as well? Just gets that Shami vibe. He has that pace, that length. Obviously, there's a difference in, you know, how much Shami has already played test cricket or international cricket. Just got that vibe. What did you make of Siraj's debut?
I think very, very good. And to be honest, I'm not surprised, even with Navdeep Saini. If you look at their red ball cricket with the first-class sides, Hyderabad and Delhi, India A, they've been extremely, I mean, they're better red ball bowler than white ball bowlers. I mean, I've always said that for last year. I mean, in fact, when Siraj was made his debut with white ball, I was like, are you picking for the wrong format? Because that's how good both these bowlers are with the red ball. The thing is about, and but the, you know what, Navdeep and Siraj are very similar because both of them are head bowlers. Both of them are seam bowlers. bowl with a wobbly. With Shami, listen, even Shami does not know how good he is. Shami is not a regular 250th wicket bowler. He is a 400 plus test wicket bowler, maybe even more. Which I don't think he really knows. I mean, maybe last year or so he has realized that. But yeah, with Siraj, I'm not surprised, as Mel mentioned, and even with Navdeep. But you know what? You might see a surprise. I will not. I'm going to stick my out and say, before Navdeep, I might look at Shardul Thakur to play the next test match, because he brings something different. Obviously, the experience. Only reason up. With Natarajan, as Mel mentioned, was his experience. I mean, a handful of first-class cricket, first-class matches. And we are talking about a very, very important test match. I mean, you know, I mean, both the test matches would be important, but this is different. So, yeah, I mean, Shardul, maybe we can discuss some other time.
Yeah, probably the third test match.
Shardul
got injured, right? Shardul got injured in the same test that Prithvi Shaw made his debut in, and he was part of the test squad, and then he's just dropped. It's been a two-year cycle. Yeah, he was never dropped. It's been a tough time for him, you know, just to come back, because the fast bowling riches are just so good. Let's quickly move on to the Indian batting and, you know, the whole batting scenario, because we've spoken about the Australian batting. And there's another debutant we need to speak about, Shubman Gill. Mel, two debutants from the Indian side. Obviously, you were impressed with Siraj, but what about Shubman Gill? He had that composure that everybody's expected of him. He has the shots. And I remember tweeting this in the second innings that, okay, we've lost a couple wickets. Mayank Agarwal's gone. Pujara's gone. But I was confident till the time Shubman Gill was there, India was not going to be losing that second innings. It was just a nervy feeling for everyone who was watching after 36 all out. But I was like, you know, Gill is there. Even in his first test match, that composure is just there. As long as he's there. And, you know, he's batted all his life on those Punjab wickets. Good bounce. The day four Melbourne wicket was like day one or day two India wicket. So the kind of bounce he had and the kind of shots he was playing on the rise. I mean, he's looked the part. Shubman Gill, he's looked the part.
Well, I think it's not just his composure for me. It's that he has, and this sometimes comes with a debutant. He played with a kind of fearlessness and a freedom. And that was what really stood out with me. I mean, you know, we know he looks great, but it was the way he was, I suppose, able to combine composure with that kind of freedom and fearlessness. And there were times I think he must have faced seven or eight really terrific balls from Pat Cummins when he was bowling that really awesome spell first up. He faced a bunch of really hard balls, and then he hit this beautiful drive for four, and it was like, well, hello. But then he'd play an aggressive shot, but then he was quite happy to pull it back again. So he got kind of into a pretty good rhythm, I thought, of when to attack, when to defend, but he wasn't afraid to take on the bowlers. And that was brilliant to watch. I mean, you couldn't have asked for a much better performance from both your debutants if you're India, can you? They were both terrific and incredibly exciting prospects.
Deep, 326 for India in the first innings. The one phase of play, as Mel mentioned, the one phase of play that really troubled India in that innings was Pat Cummins' spell on day two. I mean, what a bowler. What a bowler. I mean, Pat Cummins, you can't really... He bowls, he bats, he fields. I mean, I love him. I just love him. I saw him throughout that series in 2018. I have been a huge fan of Pat Cummins ever since. I hope he leads Australia one day. But that spell, India weathered the storm there. And then it was up to Rahane, a masterclass of a knock. You spoke about his captaincy, a word on his on Cummins, and then of course Rahane's knock.
I mean, listen, as you mentioned, he's one of the I'd say all rounders, more of a bowling all rounder than an all rounder, but he's somebody who you expect 25-30 of him, which again, someone like him, he hasn't contributed to the bat as yet, but you do expect him to contribute. There's a reason why Australia made him the vice captain, because obviously he's somebody who's, you know, he's a thinking cricketer. He has leadership qualities, and you can see it. You can see the way he walks around, talking to his fellow bowlers. For example, Bumrah, he's only won 13 test matches, but you can see he's a leader. The way he conducts himself, he speaks to everyone else. So with someone like Cummins, you know it. And the worst part about Cummins is, again, a little better than Hazelwood, but Hazelwood again is very disciplined. But if there is no help on the surface, Hazelwood might not be as difficult to kind of bat, comparatively speaking. But Cummins, because he gets the ball to swing apart from seam, so he's dangerous on every pitch, right? Irrespective of what pitch you play on, he will always create problems. And obviously, that discipline is always at that fourth stump line. He's asking questions of you. He's like very Agrath-ish, Pollock-ish kind of a bowler, yeah, who's at you all the time. So I think he's absolutely brilliant. Going to Ajinkya, I don't think that this was one of his most fluent hundreds, but this was one of his best hundreds. I think his 100 at odds was his most fluent, no two ways of it. It's absolutely brilliant. But this was, you know, was gritty. And I mean, if the odds were against India, and he are the leading, you're the leader there. Lost three early wickets as well. So I just, you know, I thought from looking at the context of that innings, was one of the better innings that I've seen of late, Test innings. Yeah.
Well, you were there into 2014, that knock, Ajinkya Rahane knock at Lords. You were there, right? You covered that series.
Yeah.
So I was there too, and the feeling that I got watching Rahane bat at MCG, 2014 was an amazing year for Rahane. He had good runs in South Africa, almost got his 100 there. Then he went to Wellington, got his maiden 100, Lords 100. And I was speaking to Graham Swan at Lords after that 100. And he was like, you know what? Rahane, man of the match. Look at that green top. Look at that green top. Who bats on that green top? Which Indian batsman can bat on that green top? And then MCG, he had that counter-attacking 100, that partnership with Virat. I thought Rahane has gone back to his 2014 mold. Not the counter-attacking Rahane, but the confident Rahane. Not as Deep said, the free-flowing Rahane, but the confident Rahane. Because last 2-3 years, it's been a bit of an up-and-down test career for Rahane. He's had to say goodbye to his limited overs career. But this was Rahane at his confident best. Not for a moment, it looked like. I mean, it was an up-and-down pitch. Pat Cummins was perhaps bowling his probably really the best spell of his series so far. But not for a moment did Rahane look like, you know, okay, until that run out happened on day three, that, okay, I'm in trouble here. And he just maintained that throughout the innings, took India to a score that, yeah, they were ahead from that point on.
Yeah, well, I think when you talk about Rahane, you do think about the calmness. And when you talk about the turnaround for the Indian team in the context of how they won this game, just think about the context of Rahane for a second, because in that first match, you know, he ran out Virat Kohli, and then very soon afterwards, it was like he plonked his feet in wet cement and couldn't move them. And I wondered at the time, you know, if he was maybe quite rattled by that run out and what had happened. I did think, by the way, it was a bold play for Jadeja for the captaincy for running out Rahane in the second test. So who knows what we'll see next. But the way that he's retained his calm, and I do think that's a sign of confidence, because he knows he's a great batter. He knows he bats well at the MCG. He was now in charge of the team. And so I think when it is a real sign of confidence when you're able to very quickly bounce back from a bad day or a bad time, because you know you've got that in you. And I know we're not talking about Kohli's captaincy. One thing, because, you know, you might never have me back on this show again once Bharat Sundaresan's available and with his hair. but this team, don't forget, Rahane is the cricketer now, is also a product of that Virat Kohli team and his captaincy. And I think all the Indian players, really, they do look very confident within themselves and what they're doing. The likes of Ashwin, you know, taking the leadership role that he is, for example. So he's developed in that, and who knows, we might not be seeing the Rahane of 2014. We might be seeing a whole new incarnation of Rahane altogether, where he's able to step into the captaincy when needed, but also just impart his calm. There are times when the Indian team might need the firing up that Kohli brings them. There might be time that they need the calm. In a way, I think they're kind of very complementary characters in that leadership role, and that's no bad thing.
Mentioned about confidence, yes. The other important aspect is clarity.
Yeah.
I think for me, footwork is just a reflection of how clear your thought process is. Now, if you look at Rahane in the last 2-3 years, you'd see him play from the crease more often. But when you look at this innings, and you mentioned about 2014, the difference between 2014 and let's say Rahane post 2015 onwards was his footwork. I'm sure both of you were there. You remember him taking a big stride forward and cover driving and stuff like that. You didn't see that from Rahane last couple of years. It was like very from the crease, half cock kind of a footwork, not fully back or fully front. But again, this innings, you see his footwork. He was taking those big strides. He was using the depth. See, for me, that footwork showed me that his thought process was very clear. He was very clear in terms of what he's there for, what he wants to do. You know, team like in the zone. And when I say in the zones, for me, definitely being in the zone is when you're not thinking, when you have zero thoughts in your mind. You're just watching and playing. You know, watch the ball, hit the ball, as they say it. I think that's what was so good about that innings, that clarity of thought.
And just carrying on from what Mel said, you know, Jadeja for captaincy in the third test, you know, you run out your captain, you lead the side and you win the match with a match-winning 100. I mean, Jadeja, seriously, Deep, Jadeja, you mentioned, first of all, coming to you first, about this Jadeja decision to play Jadeja, the all-rounder. I remember MS Dhoni in 2012 when Jadeja first came onto the scene. England series, when he played three spinners in Nagpur, you were down in the series. And he said, you know what? Ravindra Jadeja might not look the all-rounder that we hope for right now, but give him a few years. Let him bring his batting up to notch. And yeah, it's been coming. It's been 8-9 years since then. But it has finally happened, hasn't it? I mean, Jadeja now is a proper all-rounder. He can play as an all-rounder, and India can play five bowlers alongside him. He can be an alternate to Hardik Pandya. He may not be the pace all-rounder, But what's wrong with a spin all-rounder?
Yeah. Fair enough. And I tell you what, you know, just after the first test match, and somebody asked me, one of the social media handles, is who will replace Virat? And I said, listen, your straightforward would be KL Rahul.
Yeah.
But your left field would be Jadeja. He's averaging 60 in the last 2 years. Last 4 years, his batting average is 42, which is better than a lot of batsmen who are playing out there, right? So, I mean, and the way he's bat, his confidence that he's carried, he will carry from the white ball cricket as well. And the last couple of years of test match cricket batting as well. And we all, I mean, he's still what, ICC number 2 test rank bowler. He was number 1 since what, 6 months ago or something. So, I mean, he is obviously a proper all-rounder. And obviously the transitions happened. I think 2017, he dropped from the test side. And then 2018 or something, he played against West Indies and he got some runs. I think that's where he thought about that, you know, in the pecking order, he's going to go after Kuldeep Yadav as well. So he started looking at himself as a number 3 spin bowling option. And then I think he said, you know what, I can add value to myself and the team with batting. Let's focus on batting because he can bat. It's just that he always thought himself as a bowler. And if I can contribute with the bat, I'll be great. But he never took himself seriously as a batsman. He's got 3 triple hundreds in domestic cricket. I know at Rajkot or whatever, I mean, but triple hundreds. But I think in the last 2 years, I think he's consciously made that decision of start thinking like a batsman and bat like a batsman, not a bowler who can bat.
A couple of things about Jadeja.
Yeah.
I actually thought that while obviously, you know, he does have the very handy bowling option, I felt that they brought him in to shore up the batting.
Yeah,
especially after what happened. So for me, it felt like they brought him in mostly for that reason. And then obviously when Umesh went down, it became more important. His bowling became more important. The other thing he does, though, to a team is he lifts the standard of the fielding straight away. I mean, we all know how good he is. He's like the specialist superstar that seems at times. But he kind of, it's not just the all round in the batting and bowling, but I think generally in the fielding as well. And that was a real problem for India in that first, not just the first test, but throughout this tour in the white ball games as well. Even like the ground fielding has at times been poor. And so I think that's, for India, it's great to have him there because he immediately, I think, lifts the standards overall when it comes to fielding. I love him. I fell in love with him as a cricketer in the 2017 tour. And you know how I know? Because I never remember I've got a terrible memory, which is not a good thing in this profession. But when he was playing, I said to someone the other day, it was when he ran out Josh Hazlewood in Ranchi, and I went, oh my gosh, I can't believe I remember a run out of Josh Hazlewood. What a ridiculous thing. But that's Jadeja. The other thing he brings is he's just so entertaining. And you will remember him running out a number 11 bowler.
Yeah, I mean, we'll remember from this match the run out of Rahane, and perhaps also the catch he took. You know, Shubman Gill almost running into him like, you know what? You're not supposed to catch. You're an Indian fielder. You're not supposed to catch. We're not catching in Adelaide. Why are we going to catch in Melbourne? And Jadeja is like, no, I don't drop catches. I catch everything that comes my way. That was a good catch to start off India. Mel, quickly moving on to the second innings, India took that 130-run lead and Australia were, what, 70 for 3 with Labuschagne and Smith gone. Was there ever going to be a comeback from there for Australia?
Well, there wasn't in the end. I mean, Australia's tail is actually pretty good. And I know some India fans get a little bit frustrated with India struggling to bowl out the tail, especially when they're away. But Australia does have a really good batting. Okay. But look, Australia's tail is actually really good. Josh Hazlewood, let's talk about him as number 11. I don't think he would bat at number 11 in quite a few other teams internationally. I think he's maybe Trent Bolt is the only other one you would say could be, you know, the same or better, arguably. But he's a pretty good number 11. Nathan Lyon had two shots, a forward defence and a sweep a few years ago. But now he's able to get some runs when needed. And you see, like, Stark and Cummins as well. So there was always a chance. One good thing for Australia out of this test has been to see Cameron Green. You know, early days for him, I know there's been a massive amount of hype about him, but he does look like the real deal. He wasn't there for his bowling when you talk about all-rounders. I don't think he was more there for his batting, which showed real promise. Like, he was going really well. For such a big man, he manages to look balanced in almost every situation. Whether it's like watching a big rugby league player perform beautiful ballet when he comes dancing down the pitch to the spinners. It's like, you shouldn't be allowed to do that if you're over 6'2". It just shouldn't be allowed physically. So to see the way he did all of that was really good. And while he was there, you know, maybe a chance. I don't think anyone really did. They've got problems there. I look at Travis Head. I really like Travis Head, but there's become an inevitability about a Travis Head innings where you feel like he's going to make 20 or 30 runs and then he's going to get out either to a back foot punch or waft outside off stump. And I think, you know, as Bharat and I were doing our video the other day, and I was like, if schmucks like this know that there's something like that about to happen to Travis Head, you can bet your bottom dollar teams have got that figured out. So when we see Australia and the changes they make, who they might bring in, I think Cameron Green is in a better position to keep his spot in the middle order than Travis Head is, particularly if they bring in new openers and drop Matthew Wade down the order.
And I think they've also added David Warner to the squad, so he might and Pekoski, he's available as well. So probably a couple of changes in the Australian batting lineup coming forward. Deep India, well, they bowled even better in the second innings with Umesh not available. Rahane on the money with juggling his four bowlers. Tell me, you know, there's always this India with Virat Kohli. I don't want to talk about the cricket angle here. I want to talk about the mental or the way they approach the attitude of the Indian team here. They were not loud on the field. You didn't have those celebrations. And obviously, it's always Virat who does that. This was a totally different way that they handled the situation. And I'll tell you what, when India won, when Rahane hit those winning runs, Before that ball, there was this camera pan onto the dugout, and I expected them to all just keep running in, and yay, we won, and we just turned it around. None of that happened. None of that happened. So, it was almost as if 36 all out. Oh yeah, who cares? And all which you expect with Ravi Shastri in charge, an aberration. Get it out of your mind. Get it out of your system. Just get on the field, do your business. But this was doing your business in a totally different way from, let's say, if Virat had been around. What do you have to say about that? And again, before anybody gets angry with me, any of our listeners or viewers, I am not advocating a change in test captaincy just yet.
Okay. Now, my point is this. Who actually, apart from Virat, when you talk about celebration, Bumrah is a very muted one.
Yeah.
Ajinkya is a muted one. Pujara is a muted one. Ashwin runs around a bit, which he did after getting Smith out.
Yeah, we saw you, Mel.
So if you think about, even Umesh is like that. Siraj, in first class cricket, he's like that. So and it's not his fault, right? If the camera is always on Virat, right? So if the camera always picks up Virat, it's not his fault. So I mean, I'm not going to read anything into it at all. But yeah, it was good to see Indian team coming back the way it did. I think it was very workmanlike, very professional in the approach. But you know, I just want to go back to the Australian batting, and this is something which is very very un-Australian. How I see it, it's the batting approach. I can't remember in last decade and a half, in fact, maybe a couple of decades now, Australia batting at 2 and over. I mean, when was the last time you saw Australia playing 100 overs and finishing at 200? I mean, that just, I don't know. That just tells me there's something is wrong there. The approach, I mean, listen, I don't mind teams out for 180, 170, but the approach can't change. And this, even in the first test, I still can understand the ball doing a lot. But this test approach, I was like, nah, this is not Australian side we've seen the last decade and half, a couple of decades. So, I don't know, Mel, I mean, what take on that?
Well, I think, by the way, just on Ashwin, well, that takes me into Ashwin's celebrations of Smith's wickets have actually reminded me of David Warner. I think he's trying to outdo David Warner's leap, which takes me on to Dave Warner, because I think that's a big part of that lower scoring rate is they've had Dave Warner there, you know, and yeah, maybe he hasn't always had success, but usually, you know, he manages to see off a lot of balls, a lot of the new ball, and he gets things ticking over, you know, pretty quickly at the same time. So the lack of Warner, I think, is part of the reason that we saw that slower scoring rate. You had Matthew Waite, well, you've had Joe Burns, who has just looked like the weight of the universe has been on his shoulders. So he was never going to score quickly. And Matthew Waite is, yes, an aggressive batter, but he's a stopgap solution in a makeshift role and just sort of trying to adapt, I think. I think he did a reasonable job in you know, playing quite a few balls at least as well there, even if he wasn't scoring in his customary manner. But it goes back to what I said, you know, that there's been a lot of runs have relied at times in the past couple of years, not always, but a lot of the time you feel that there's a lot of confidence in that team that Warner, Smith and Labuschagne or some combination of those or one of them is actually going to get runs, and they'll get them at a reasonable rate as well, because Smith's not a slow scorer and neither is Labuschagne once they get going. But so without those three, all of a sudden, everything's riding on these other batters who, against really good opposition, against weaker bowling attacks, they've done pretty well. But against stronger bowling attacks, they haven't always had that. And you know what it's like if you've got someone who's super, super good at something always at your side. It gives you sort of more confidence because they're almost like a safety blanket around you. Well, look, you know that there's someone around, we can get the job done. So I don't know how much of that has played into it, but definitely without Warner, Australia haven't been able to get off to the quick and confident starts that we often see them have. I mean, let's not forget that the only thing Rahane lost in that test was the toss. And in the end, he kind of won because I think it was a very good toss to lose as well.
Well, looking ahead, you've talked about batting, bowling, and of course, it'll be very interesting to see what sort of changes. And as Mel said, you know, Australia are reliable on three batsmen for their runs. The third one of them is coming back now. So let's see how good of a shape he is in. Rohit Sharma being added to the Indian squad. There probably will be a change to their bowling lineup. Very quickly, Deep, how do you see this series progressing? First, Deep, and then Mel. Same question. How do you see this series progressing from here on?
I think both of us have mentioned this, Chetan, that this is very similar teams, very good bowling side, very fragile batting. Yeah, Ajinkya got that 100, that was a magnificent 100. But take that 100 out, if he had got out early, I mean, India would be struggling with the batting as well. So, yeah. I think the story would be the same. Almost very, very close games. It'll be about consistent cricket. That's how I see Test cricket. So we're talking about five.
You know what, Dave? Let's predict winners. Let's predict winners from here on, because we are at the halfway stage. We've seen both sides. You know, it's getting really. You know, yeah. You know, it's the same. The humdrum drone. Let's get some predictions in. Come on, at the halfway stage, Deep.
I think India's ahead as of now. I think after that last Test match, I think psychologically, I think Australia, and I'll be very, very surprised if they pick Warner, because I know he's not 100% fit. So that just would tell you the desperation or the requirement of Warner in that side, and then how desperately Australia would want him. And if he's playing, that just gives me, as an opposition, that gives me another feather in my cap, saying, you know, that's how desperate Australia is to play Warner, 80% or 70% fit Warner. So yeah, I mean, I think mentally and the way India has played as so far in this Test series, I would keep India ahead.
Right, Mel, well, for you.
Well, what I will say, does this mean to what we're seeing in the last two Tests? Can we put to bed the whole concept of momentum, which I think is just vastly overrated in cricket? Because I don't think there is any momentum. Usually, like, you know, one team's a bit better than the other, or the pitch favors one, or you win a good toss, whatever it is. There's all those things that go into it. So I don't think momentum is anything at this point. Exactly as Deep says, you know, we've got flawed batting sides, we've got really good bowling sides, and a few weeks before this series, it felt like Australia were really strong favourites. But as the series got closer, and I said this at the time, it felt like it had really narrowed the whole idea of Australia being strong favourites. Now, if Smith can turn around his form, if they can find a way through that, that changes things a lot, because once he is going, then he can be really difficult. Whether or not he can overcome that thing in his mind that India have just managed to work him out so well, I still think it's really close. Like, I certainly wouldn't put it past Australia to be able to come back and win the next two Tests. But I agree with Deep at the moment. I think because that 36 really was a freak thing to happen, I do think it's an aberration. I think India are possibly in a better position. They'd probably feel a bit happier, I think, going into the next Test. But there's so much uncertainty. I won't be convinced that we're playing in Sydney until we're there. I don't know about Warner. Don't really know either side which way they're going to go with certain selections. So I would say maybe India might feel a little bit better at the moment, but I don't think Australia will ever roll over, and they won't ever roll over at home.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. You don't even have to mention that. This is just the Australian way, isn't it, Mel? But it'll be interesting. it'll be interesting, if the third Test happens in Melbourne, because it would suit India with Jadeja and Ashwin playing. And of course, even if it's happening in Sydney, even that would suit India with Jadeja and Ashwin playing two spinners. But again, you can't really rule out Australia in Australia. For me, I think, you know, there's one element that we probably haven't noticed as much. Since the Adelaide first innings, when Pujara got that half century, Pat Cummins has had his number. And it's almost that same delivery every time, pitching on middle and off, and then just leaving him a bit late. Three innings since then, he's got Pujara out. For me, these two contests, Pujara versus Cummins and Ashwin versus Smith, that's probably going to decide which way the series goes. I think India can still win another Test. I can see the series ending 2-2. I think India are in a good shout to win the next Test. And of course, I've been doing some mathematical calculations about the World Test Championship. So another win on Australian soil will do really good for their chances for making the World Test Championship final, because then they would not have the pressure of winning 4-0 against England at home, 4 out of 4 Test matches against England. So that brings us to the end of the discussion about the second Test. There's just one element remaining in our today's show, and this is to do with the Hotspot Awards, which we do in the last episode of the year. But this has been that sort of a year, 2020, not much cricket. Before the recording, I was talking to Deep. We were in New Zealand. during the New Zealand tour. Australia had come over, Sri Lanka had come over. It just seems so far off, everything topsy-turvy. I don't have to define how bad this year has been. Instead of the usual, the best bowlers and batsmen and fielders in each format, let's just do one thing. Moment of the year 2020, because it's, you know, this year has been about having good moments in what has been a really bad year. Deep, first to you, your moment of the year in our Hotspot Award 2020.
I think the West Indies and England, the first day, I mean, when cricket was resumed after COVID and all, I think that was the moment like life is back. And before that, it's nothing to do with cricket. But then when Bundesliga started, Bundesliga was the first sporting league to start, I think 16th of July or something.
Yeah.
I really don't watch Bundesliga, but I did watch that. And there is something about live sport that makes you feel alive. And I, from a sporting perspective, I think that day, Bundesliga first game, I don't remember, it was whatever, it was 17th or 16th of June, July. And from cricketing perspective, was the first ball which was bowled England versus West Indies.
Yeah, Mel, for you?
Well, there you go. So Deep goes from the beginning of cricket again. I'm going to go back to when it finished for all intents and purposes for a lot of people. And that was here in Melbourne at the Women's T20 World Cup final, where you had, you know, 86,000 people filling the MCG, a huge crowd, Katy Perry dancing cricket bats, but then a brilliant match. You know, India had been so exciting throughout. Australia were dominant that night, but just the whole celebration of women's cricket. And it would have been inconceivable a few years ago that you could have had that. And I'm going to use this opportunity to tell you to, hey, sort the BCCI out. Where's women's cricket for India? When are they going to play again? Because they're not going to be playing out here. So for me, that was the biggest moment.
Yeah, you have friends in the BCCI. Just pick up the phone. Yeah.
No. So all I'm saying is the FDP will be out soon is what I gather. I think what they're waiting for is for the Indian domestic season will start. And once they figure out the protocols of hosting games, I think women's cricket will start. I think the first domestic cricket which is starting is with the T20, Syed Mushtaq Ali. Once that happens, I think the FTP is almost ready. It's not been disclosed as of now, but as soon as they can get things going in India and all the bubble and everything, it'll start. Yeah, because BCCI has already mentioned that if there is any lack of cricket, they will be compensated, both men's and women's cricket. So everything as of now is on even keel. It's not men's cricket and women's cricket. So at the same pedestal right now.
Right. For me personally, the moment of the year. Yeah. Go on. Yeah.
If I don't see it soon, I'm coming to find you. If I don't see any women playing soon, won't escape me. COVID be damned. I'll track you down. But for me, yes.
Take that seriously, Deep. Take that seriously.
Absolutely. Incredible day.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah, he should take the theory. I am. But that was it. Let's bring back. I hope we get to see in the world again a time where we can have a crowd like that for a women's game, because it was just incredible, a wonderful thing to see on the back of 2017 World Cup in England. To see that was absolutely amazing.
Hopefully we get to see that in New Zealand, you know, with the next Women's World Cup. And have to agree with Deep, Mel pointing out such a brilliant memory, and I think that has to be one of the top contenders for moment of the year. For me personally, also, you know, given the year that we've had, again, Bundesliga, that moment, even I don't watch Bundesliga as much. You keep yourself updated what's happening. But that moment, you know, I have a recording of that. I was recording on my TV, you know, that, okay, sport is such an elemental part of our lives. Just not just because we are covering the sport, even as normal fans, it's just such an elemental part of our life. And also West Indies and England, that's from a cricket point of view. But again, Mel, yes, I think Deep, sure, we should give the moment of the year award to what Mel said, that final, the women's cricket final, I think really top notch. That tournament, that tournament was really top notch. That brings us to the end of this episode. It's been a fun-filled episode. All things test cricket and moments of the year. And of course, all of us catching up again. we usually do that on the sidelines at the coffee counter in press boxes and media houses. But it's good to see Mel, you know, all cheery, her usual self. Thanks, Mel, as always, for joining us on this show.
Thanks so much. It's been great to see you guys. It hasn't been the same not having the Indian contingent out here, I have to say.
Right. And Deep, hopefully.
And Happy New Year.
Yeah. Happy New Year. And hopefully we'll be back next time around. Deep, hope you have a good time in Goa tonight, ringing in 2021 for all of us. Thank you for joining us once again. Yeah, and thanks to all our listeners and viewers who've joined us throughout the year. Hopefully, we have kept you entertained, and the promise of entertaining you and talking more cricket throughout 2021. We have a jam-packed lineup, jam-packed schedule, lots more to talk about next year. Hopefully, it'll be a good one. In the meanwhile, this episode will be available all the usual places, Spotify, JioSaavn, YouTube, and Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts as well. Do tune in next year as you have this year. Hope you stay safe and wish you all a very happy new year, 2021.